Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our fifth season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
And you normally say, no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Okay, first off, Kian, welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for coming on. How's life at the moment? What are you up to?
Hey, all good. Back in Dublin. Had a bit of downtime after Tokyo. So we got a bit of traveling done. Got to Okinawa for a week with a few of the team. Came back, did a wee tour of the locality, you know, meeting the primary schools and things like that. And then back up to college now. So getting back into the swing of things, back into the base phase.
Absolutely. Did you have a full, during that period, did you do any running at all? Or was it just enjoying doing nothing?
Well, we were in an Airbnb kind of in the middle of nowhere. So we had to actually rent bikes. It was kind of like a last minute call by all of us. So we were renting bikes to kind of get around the island, which was tougher than I thought it was going to be. I think we were at Andrew Costner and decided it was actually easier to run than it was to cycle up the hills. And he was definitely right. So yeah, by the end, we were actually kind of back doing a bit of running.
That's cool. Yeah, I think planning your off season is one of those things you don't really want to do before the season's finished, because you don't want to be looking forward to something other than what you've got ahead of you. Is that fair?
I don't know. I don't really agree with that. I'm like, saying that fair. Though, I didn't actually plan anything. I actually missed my flight home. So I heard they were going to Okinawa, and they were like, oh yeah, you should come. And I was like, ah, grand, happy days. So I hopped on there for a week. Great call. You know, kind of nice to wait for the whole kind of buzz to die down a little bit before heading home. Can be a bit crazy.
Yeah.
And then, so back up to Dublin now and getting into the swing of things.
Yeah. Since getting back to Dublin, has your life changed at all? Do you feel different as a result of it? Do you get, I guess, more attention from maybe people that you wouldn't expect?
Not really, no. Ireland's kind of small, I suppose. So yeah, you do kind of get noticed the odd time, and people are great, kind of coming up saying congrats, things like that. But not really. It's all about Eurocross season now. So the hype has moved on. I'm a nobody now.
Yeah, I can't imagine you're preparing for Eurocross.
No, definitely not. I used to when I was a kid, just be big into cross. But no, in the last couple of years, I've definitely moved away from it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Look, I think what was interesting in your post-race interview, you initially walked off the track and you were not disappointed, but you were definitely a little pissed with fourth place. Is that, now you've had time to reflect, is that still the case?
Yeah, I mean, going in, obviously, I was ranked, I don't know what I was, 40, 50th, something like that. I was way down the list. But I kind of knew that wasn't really the case. We just couldn't really get into the race to actually show it. Like, I was kind of negative splitting the world standards, kind of running away with races, coming into it, feeling really good. Wasn't sure exactly what shape I was in. And so then you got the heat draw and you're up with like Peter Ball and Bryce Hopple. You're like, oof, this isn't the... I wasn't amazingly confident going into it. My coaches were, but I wasn't. Just because, you know, the way when you haven't ran the times, it's hard to have in your head that you are able to do it. And then it was actually when I was in the car room kind of watching the heat ahead of me, and I saw like 1:45, and can't remember what the close was, but I remember thinking like that was very doable. You know, I had ran my race coming into Tokyo was in Ortigem. I ran like 1:44.3, kind of with a pretty big negatives or a reasonably big negative split with a good close. I was actually, I think, a quicker close than what they did in the heat before me. So that kind of gave me a lot of confidence. But before that, I had none. It was only literally walking out to the track. I was like, all right, yeah, do this now. And then obviously, you know, winning that race, that went well. So that gave me big confidence going into the semi. I was, you know, I kind of thought I could win the semi after the heat.
Wow.
And then after the semi, I thought I could win the finals. That's why I was a bit over. But the lads pulled it out of the bag. In fairness, like 1:41s. That's why I was a bit pissed initially. But when you think back, like, it's a huge push on fourth in the world. You can't be too disappointed with it. It's a great return on the season.
Is that something that's, I guess, maybe different in the 800 to how it is in some of the other events, like maybe the 15, where actually the heats and the semis are so tough that they really can give you confidence that you can go do it in the final, whereas some of the other races, you might be thinking, well, everyone's kind of keeping their cards close to their chest anyway, so we don't really know. But in the eight, you kind of have to race all out anyway.
Yeah, I think people have gotten so strong over the 800 that it's, and a big thing that wasn't really discussed was the day off in between the rounds for the 800, which doesn't always happen. That really kind of gives people the freedom to, you know, go hammer and tongs at it, knowing that they have the full day off then to recover. And with the qualification kind of being fairly brutal compared to maybe the 15 or the 5, like top 2 in the semi, top 3 in the heats, you know, you do kind of have to go for it.
You do. I wonder, through the season, you talk about these negative splits, and you did do a lot of them, and that's where you're getting a lot of your success. Was it intentional through the season to run races in that manner to prepare you for the World Championships?
No, it was probably more of a lack of confidence thing. I mean, I missed a decent bit of time after European Indoors with an injury. And then my first race was the European Team Championships, the 800. I think like the top 2 guys were like Peter Sisk and Marino Blaudek. They're like 143 high, 144.0. You know, and I obviously hadn't ran those times, and I was only just back. I kind of actually had missed. I'd only ran 3 of the prior 10 days because I'd gotten a bit of an illness, and just kind of took as much time as off as was required to get over it.
Wow.
So confidence wasn't exactly very high, but so I kind of started off slow enough, and then the pressure was on because, in other way, you're selected for the team champs. You want to actually justify that. But yeah, ran well, ran like I think it was a 2.2 negative split, like a 12.4 last 100. So that was like, I was like, wow, okay, this is, you know, I'm actually in better shape than I thought here. Then we went to like Cork City Sports. It was actually Henry Jonas, the British guy, won that race. But that was kind of at a brutal start. It was like 13 in the race. So I had a very good close as well, another negative split, but then that brought down to like 145.5. So full second quicker than team champs. Then we had Morton Games 2 days later. That wasn't negative split. That was pretty perfect race and ran my world standard there. So that was huge relief, because obviously the prior couple of years hadn't gone amazing. And then kind of went back into like a strength block really after that, kind of abandoned 800 work. Then Nationals came second in that. That was probably maybe left me a little bit shortchanged for that. That was like basically a final 100 meter sprint between me and Mark English. I think we ran like 1:48. I think he closed in, it was like 11.8, something, 11.9. It was proper, just 100 meter sprint really.
Yeah.
And then I had Ortegem that went well. So no, it wasn't really Ortegem. I just kind of run to win. It just so happened that the races I was in, that's what was required. But yeah, Tokyo, definitely no negative splits there. That's what I was kind of hoping for going in. I was like, if I can just get through the heat. And I'd actually said right before, I hope I get drawn with someone like Max in the semi-final, because, you know, he hadn't actually front run every race that season, but he has done so in the past, and I thought he would again. And I just get kind of hauled around to a big PB, which is really what I wanted going in. So yeah, I kind of exceeded my own expectations there.
Yeah. You mentioned that your coaches were really confident in terms of your ability being higher than that kind of 40th ranked. What was it that you were doing in training that was giving them so much confidence?
Yeah, when I say coaches, I mean, I probably have, kind of two. I've had my longtime coach, Joe Ryan. I've had him since I was like 13. I think this is actually our 10-year anniversary. So he's kind of more the, you know, your standard like running coach.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he was just kind of looking at, you know, some of the workouts that I was doing coming into it. He didn't tell me this. He had predicted around 142 high, 142 mid.
Mm.
And then the other coach I had is Martine McCarthy. She's a strength and conditioning and coach, and my speed coach, speed development coach. She's based out of the Sports Ireland Institute here. That's where I'm kind of based as well, for a lot of stuff. And she was kind of looking at nearly from the other side of things, like my max velocity going into it. Things like that, the stuff that she was seeing. She was actually out in Hong Kong in our holding camp, so she saw the workouts there firsthand.
Mm.
She wasn't really looking at it from the speed side of things rather than the strength side of things. But she had actually, again, didn't tell me this. I heard this only from my roommate, Carl Doyle, after the race. She had told him in Hong Kong I would run 142.5. So they both kind of came to a similar conclusion independent of each other, which I thought was quite interesting. But yeah, they didn't actually tell me that. They didn't want to blow my head up. They're just like, you'll run well. Just get in there and get in the mix.
Did you have an idea of what you'd run?
I thought I would have thought 143.0. I didn't see how it could be any slower than that.
Yep.
I know people say, oh, you know, what kind of like big workouts were we doing? Like, we don't really believe in doing too many huge workouts. Kind of more polarized approach, you know, do a good bit of work on the max speed development, working on technical efficiency and form, using like 400 meter pace, with the pace we would kind of use to do that. I do a lot in the gym, and then kind of then a good bit on the aerobic side. We went back to do 1500 pace work as well after Morton Games, went back into like a mini sprint block. As long you can work on that, and as long as you kind of keep the raw speed well developed, you know, it's a pretty smooth transition back into the 800 meter stuff. So we didn't actually start sharpening up until after Origin. That's why we were quite impressed with Origin, because like, we're not actually training for an 800 here, and you know, I'm still walking off the track grand after running another like world standard time. I suppose the one workout I think Joe was kind of impressed with, we did like 2 500s off, I can't remember, I think it was 10 minutes. I think it was like 62 low, 62.2, and then 61.0 with like a slightly sub 12 seconds last 100. Just for that kind of change of pace work. So that was kind of that was just when we were getting as sharp as we could. And that was a good indication, I suppose, to them that I was in good shape.
Jesus.
Yeah. Interesting as well that you mentioned the focus on form, because Matt and I literally, just before you jumped on the call, it's you kind of watching that final back, and even amongst the best in the world, your form looks unbelievable.
Yeah, that's been, I kind of messed around after I had a good junior career. I went to college and kind of probably behaved too much like a regular college student rather than a pro athlete. I'd say I was a pretty unprofessional professional athlete for a while there. But the one thing that was consistent was my work with Martina, the gym, before working with her the last, I'd say, must be close on 3 years now. So kind of in over the Sports Institute twice a week, and that'd be a huge focus. Stuff we put a massive emphasis on all that form, on that sprinting. And I think it's a huge benefit, you know, even for like your running economy and like recovering in between rounds. And so, yeah, that's been a big focus of the last while. You know, a lot of work with the physios and soft tissue on kind of getting me a bit more mobile and actually able to hit proper sprinting positions, and then working in the gym to be able to have the strength to hold them throughout the race. So yeah, so it's been,
that's interesting. So that's how you view the 800, you and your coaching team view the 800 as pretty much a sprint event.
Yeah, it's part of it. Like, I'd say, you know, even if you go back to Seb Coe, he had plenty of measurements of this is what you need to run for your 200 and stuff like that, and it's well ahead of his time. It's still correct today. Like, you know, the goal for me next year will be to run, you know, around maybe a 40-45.5 stand and start 400 and a low 330-1500, around 330-1500. Like, that's kind of the two pillars you kind of need, and then you can come in and work on more of the anaerobic 800 meter specific work then. But those are kind of the two prerequisites. You need that strength and you need that speed. That's probably the one thing in Ireland that could do a bit more focus on. For the 800, we kind of come from a more traditional cross-country miler, you know, big mileage point of view. I suppose that's been the philosophy change that we've had, and my coach Joe has had as well over the last couple of years, like, you know, seeing just how necessary that other side of things is. So, because as a junior, like, I just was kind of more the same of that, you know, traditional Irish runner, like, you know, just big engine, didn't really have much speed. If you put me in the gym, I couldn't lift anything. Kind of like quite reasonably slow, reasonably weak. I mean, well, wasn't that slow. I think I ran a good 800 as a junior as well, 46.1 as indoors. But that was, again, more so coming from a big engine. There wasn't much 800 meter work going on or speed work going on. So yeah, I spent the last kind of 3 years kind of really working on that stuff. And it's, yeah, I suppose I had kind of let the more strength side, aerobic side of things not develop as well as it should have had, given the trajectory I was looking at when I was a junior, just from being inconsistent on it. But definitely the last 2 years have started to like build that back up to where it is. And then when you pair the two of them together, I think that's when you start to see the real results.
Yeah, it sounds like you've really obviously thought about what maybe your weaknesses are and worked on them in the past few years. Is there anything now that you're like, that's my biggest weakness going into 2026?
I think, yeah, we have a pretty good idea. Like if you break down the 800s, there's not much effort being put into finding areas to improve. There's so much that we can find. Like on the aerobic side of things, I think we just think another year of aerobic development, proper aerobic development, and you know, where you're actually targeting training in the zones, which I wasn't really doing before this and this year. Before I got injured, actually, to be honest, it was actually getting injured forced me to, that was a pretty depressing time. You know, I hadn't ran amazing the last couple of years. I really kind of tried to basically go full time for try and get to Paris. And then it was going quite well. And then I kind of got a virus and it kind of derailed the whole season because I tried to train through it rather than back off and just put myself in a hole. And the doctors were like, right, you got to take like, you know, 4 weeks here just to let your system recover. So that was pretty depressing, but then kept going, ran well this indoor season. I think I was ranked fourth going into the European indoors. And so I had high hopes there. Then I got tangled up in the fall, then like tore my soleus, grade 2C. So that was pretty depressing. I felt like I was putting in a lot of work and not getting much return for it. But looking back, it was probably the best thing that happened to me because we took a very aggressive approach to cross training, but it kind of forced me to go back more to first principles and actually understand a lot more of the physiology and the reasoning behind what I was doing, why I was doing it, what I needed to get better. So I'd say my coaches were fed up with me just peppering them with questions day in, day out for those 8 to 10 weeks of getting back. So I think this is the first winter I'm actually going in where I'm like, I actually have an idea of what I'm doing. And so we're changing a good bit based on what hasn't worked in the last couple of winters. Sorry, I actually forgot what the original question was there. I went on a rant there.
To be fair, I think it was talking about just building on your weaknesses, identifying where you're going to improve.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. I mean, right now we're in a kind of data collection phase. So with this Force Institute, so I'll go in there and I'll get my DEXA scan done, get my bloods done, get my resting metabolic rate measured. You know, currently doing like a weighed out food diary with the nutritionist. So the nutrition is one thing that needs to probably tighten up. Then we'll get a lot of max strength tests done on different muscle groups, capacity tests done. And we're still, you know, even for all my work in the gym, still have a bit to go there on getting some of those numbers up to scratch. You know, we use like the physios can obviously, and the soft tissue and S&C, we kind of see it as one big system where they can like help diagnose issues and see, you know, what needs to be fixed. We have a thing where, I don't know, do you know the opto jump yokes? Is like two yellow bars on the ground and you can kind of like, you can do your CMJs and stuff and they can measure them.
Yeah.
But they can click them together over like 60 meters on a piece of track over at the Institute. And so you can run through it. And we have software there that can measure your max sprinting velocity and, you know, ground contact times and things like that. So that's a very useful tool along with like, you know, visuals like camera and just a good coach's eye on figuring out like what needs to be tweaked, what needs to be worked on over the years. So like for example, you know, Martina could kind of see that my right hip extension wasn't great. You know, my right foot was landing too far out at the center of mass. And we can get that stuff. Then it clearly shows up on the opto jump data. Then we can go and get a max strength test with the physios and we can confirm that, like, you know, my right hip abduction is basically non-existent and hip extension isn't great either. So you can get soft tissues kind of help, you know, work on that and kind of loosen it out. If tightness is an issue, you can get the physio to prescribe certain things like banded distraction exercises to see if it's more of a joint mobility issue. You know, there'll be some targeted stuff to building up that strength on the S&C side. So then we'll go back and get everything retested. You're not looking to optimize for these max strength tests, you're looking to optimize for performance. So we'll see how those changes actually come when we're measuring the max velocity and, you know, how does the data change when we're looking at it. So that's just one intervention of many that we're looking at. So it's a good system and we hope that like over time we're just gathering more and more data and just fixing these small mechanical issues. And yeah, there's no shortage of them, to be honest. But you can see it on the final stretch in Tokyo. You know, that's what we're looking for. And she was reasonably happy. I did get voice notes afterwards with a lot of suggestions as well.
Jesus.
Like, what to do better. So yeah, that's kind of like our approach to things.
I mean, this OptiJump is interesting. I actually first learned about it not even that long ago, just last month, having a conversation with a few people about it. It's just really good testing in the field, right? So you're moving away from like just all these lab tests. And like you said, you can actually get visuals on you in the field and see how your form is breaking down at fatigue as well as what your form's like at max velocity. So has that been something you've obviously been doing a lot of data collection now? This was something that you started to introduce, what, last year? Or
I'd say the last 2 years, to be honest. We've been working on that max speed development. You know, you need to raise your, you need to actually like raise your, like, you know, it's, some people say, oh, you need speed endurance for the 800, you know, not max velocity. That's not really true. You're looking to raise the ceiling so, you know, you can operate at a higher percentage of your max velocity for longer. Like, we actually haven't done much speed endurance at all. By speed endurance, you mean, you know, building up to your max velocity and then trying to resist deceleration. So things like a workout could be, I don't know, off the top of my head, a few hundred off 10 minutes in like stand and start, 21 low, then 21 high for the second one, something like that. It's what's kind of the kind of stimulus that we're going to bring in this year. But there was no point doing that over the prior couple of years because there was no, you know, you can't endure speed until you have speed. So we had to develop that for a while. Same in the gym. You know, I probably put on a little bit too much weight early years. I actually bulked up quite a lot because we were trying to get stronger. So again, we've changed gym slightly to maybe not hypertrophy as much. But yeah, that, you know, we had to develop that strength first. And now it's more about, now that we feel like I'm as generally as strong as I need to be in a lot of areas, now it's more about getting better at expressing it. So the focus is more on the stability, the mobility side of things. And then the actual skill of running, working on that technical efficiency over things like 400 meters. And you can measure all that stuff in the Opto.
What I want to ask is, you have that data, you look at yourself in the Opto Jump and you say, right, yeah, I'm breaking down the last 50, my foot's landing slightly out of position, I'm, you know, I haven't quite got that hip extension, whatever. How do you then go away? Obviously, you know, your coaches decide this, but how do you go away and change that? How do you improve such small details in your form?
Yeah, again, it's just that system of testing and then having a good team of people. S&C, physio, soft tissue, you know, I kind of defer to them and then they'll put together a program for kind of fixing these things. And then it's quite clear, like, you know, it works, it really does work. Like, and you can see it so clearly in the data, as you can see the max velocity improving week on week.
Could you give us an example of something that you would have worked on and then that would have changed into your form?
I think a lot of it, to be honest, is very simple. I think when I was injured, there was a lot of stuff we did in the gym. And because I was cross-training, I was in the gym, like 3 days a week for nearly 2 hours at a time. It was grueling enough because I wasn't exactly doing short hours in the cross-trainer either. But there was stuff there that she would have targeted that she maybe wouldn't have done had I had a big session that Saturday or something like that. So a lot of it was a lot of the banded distractions, I think, for that specific thing. We were looking to try and mobilize the hips. So it's very, you know, very specific exercises and stuff that we would do to try and work on that. And I can see it now, even just starting back, you know, it's moving a lot better in certain movements in the gym. And then you have to be kind of careful to make sure that you have the stability to actually make use of that extra mobility that you have, and you're not going to get injured off it. So like, it's reasonably niche. Like, you need good people looking over you. It's very hard to find. But yeah, that was another thing, you know, apart from the mindset change I had when I was injured, that was the other thing that I actually got out of it. I was working on some of those specific weaknesses in the gym. And then just the amount of cross training in general for the aerobic side, I think I got massive gains out of it because we're actually having this debate. You know, coach was like, I don't see how you don't run significantly quicker next year, you know, based off the amount of time that you've missed throughout the year. And I'm kind of taking devil's advocate and saying, I don't think so, because if you look at like what I needed at that point in the year, you're kind of in that post indoors, pre outdoors, you're kind of looking to rebuild a bit of the base that you may have eroded by hitting more 800 meter work indoors. Cross training allowed me to do that, maybe even more so than if I was running, I think. And then obviously the stuff in the gym that wouldn't have been done probably had I not been injured. So I actually got quite a lot out of it. Like, you would never probably put a healthy athlete on the cross trainer by choice. But, you know, in hindsight, that could have been the right call anyway. Maybe not all of it. Like, some of the sprint development stuff, obviously, I could have kept that. If I was healthy, I could have kept that going. But the sheer volume of work I was able to get done in the cross trainer with a lower risk of injury, I think, you know, could have paid dividends. And I probably won't need as much of a catch up next year, ideally, on that side of things. So it mightn't be necessary. But yeah, I got a lot out of that block. So I think it was, like, looking back, it was probably the best thing that actually did happen to me this season.
Yeah, in terms of that volume of cross training, seeing kind of 3 hours a day on the cross trainer. Is that correct?
Yeah, in doubles, in fairness. I'm not a psychopath. Schedule was Monday we did 2 75-minute doubles at kind of like 140, 145 heart rate. About 2 hours in the gym. Tuesday, I think, was 2 minimal in the morning, VO2 max in the evening. Wednesday was the same as Monday. Thursday was, I think it was doubles 4 minimal. Friday was just 2 60-minute doubles. Saturday was, that was a down day. Saturday was, I think, another 2 minimal morning, VO2 max in the evening. And then Sunday was, 2 90-minute doubles. And then, Friday was the 2-hour gym on Friday as well. And then I'd also drive down and get soft tissue after that too. So it was a lot of work.
Wow.
It was pretty tough. I found it very tough, to be honest, at the time. I was probably as close as I had a couple of exams to be studying for as well. And there's a lot of commute involved. So I was probably as close as I've come to a mental breakdown, I'd say, in my life. But it paid off in the end. And I learned a huge amount. Learned a huge amount off it. Like, we were actually implementing a lot more cross training now this winter off the back of what we learned going through that. My training this winter is actually quite different to what it was the last couple of winters, but I think for the better.
I mean, I don't know if there's any other 800 meter runner out there doing 2 hours of aerobic work a day.
Hard to know. I'm not really sure what some of them do. There is a lot of those more sprinter focused. I definitely would be not a sprinter focused. I know I'm going on a lot here about sprinting, but this is only like once, maybe twice a week kind of job. Like, my total workload is probably going to be somewhat equivalent to around 85 miles a week this winter. You know, I am more of that 8:15 type runner who has just worked really hard on getting better over that 400. The strength side is what I'm good at. Like, long term, I will go back to the 15. I just haven't had the consistency of aerobic work in the last couple of years to run a good 15 just yet. But I do think over the next few years, now that I kind of know what I'm at, that will come back, and I'll be bringing into it, like, you know, the added skills of what I've developed at my time at the 800. I think the 800 actually kind of forces you to kind of look up, both up and down. You're not just looking to get stronger, like maybe like a 5K runner would. So it's like the obvious thing in the 5K is to get stronger. And the nature of the 800 means you have to get faster too. And so, you know, you have like an added skill set there. I think definitely more of the 8:15 runner I am. But like, I do have to work on that speed side of things, you know, especially if the lads are going through in like 49.2, you know. Some of the, maybe, like, I can do a good close, but there's no point closing if I'm at the back of the pack and running into traffic. That's how Atawi is the same, faced a similar issue to me in that final. We were probably looked two of the better ones in the semi-final and then ran into a bit of traffic in the home straight. And that was our own fault. But I wouldn't have ran it any differently looking back. I'm not quick enough to go out in 49.2. I would have just blown up. But that'll be a focus of next year, is getting that 400 down, getting that speed endurance up, that I can go through that lap comfortably with the top guys and still hopefully get them on the home straight free of traffic. So that'll be the big focus for next year.
One thing that's kind of just sticking out to me listening to you speak about your training is you're very knowledgeable and passionate about the intricacies of what you do. Do you think that's important to, I guess, your mindset and your preparation? Because there's a lot of athletes we speak to and we're very surprised by how kind of oblivious they are in a way, and just say, oh, my coach kind of gets on with it, sets me what to do, and I just try and be consistent, you know?
Yeah, like, this is a fairly new version of me now, to be honest. As a junior, I was kind of getting by off a bit of talent and like some all right training, but I would have had no interest in running, wouldn't have been a fan of the sport, wouldn't know anything. Like, I could not tell you what threshold is or anything like that. I was just kind of just doing what I was told, really, and we were getting decent results. And in college, it was kind of the same. I was probably as equally focused on my studies as I was as running, and wouldn't have had much interest in the science of it. And it was only when I got injured this year that I kind of felt like, all right, my approach to things has not been working. That I actually need to, properly know what I'm doing and kind of take some ownership of my training and be able to provide better feedback to my coaches so they can make better decisions as well. And as a result, I think that's been a big mindset change, but it's worked. I think I'm definitely a lot more knowledgeable. That's why I'm quietly confident about next year. Is like, this is the first time I feel like, 2 winters ago, like, I would have been fairly locked in and I'm working hard, but I wouldn't have any idea what I was doing or how to do it. I was just like, hard work, just go for it kind of thing. Well, now everything is far more measured, quantified, controlled with like a longer term view. So it actually feels like I'm training a lot less this winter than prior winters, even though I think the volume is the same and it's probably a lot more optimal. But yeah, we'll see how the results pan out next year for confirmation of that.
We look forward to it. Talking about being a fan of the sport, you don't strike me as someone who's sort of on social media and consuming loads of content and making YouTubes and stuff like that. I mean, how much do you watch the sport and sort of interact with it outside of your own performance and running?
We have a great culture here in Ireland. It's a small enough community because we're a small enough country. So a lot of my friends are all runners. You know, the few nights out we do have is mostly with runners. A lot of the talk we talk about, it is to do with the sport. Like, I wouldn't have any interest, to be honest, in watching someone's YouTube going to a photo shoot or something like that. That just no interest. But if they're walking through a workout and explaining the reason why, you know, yeah, I'll definitely tune into that. I've definitely become more of a fan of the sport, but I'd say more from the nerdy physiology side of things rather than, you know, like, I'm not going to be tuning in to hear like what Josh Kerr and Jakob are saying to each other, you know, but I will talk, you know, listen to some podcasts, some physiologists are chatting about something random, you know, that kind of way. I definitely had a much bigger interest in it this year. So we'll see.
Yeah. What about in terms of outside of running then? So you're studying physics, is that right, or maths?
I was doing theoretical physics, and then I was kind of struggling with just trying to balance everything with that, and then I was kind of missing labs if I wanted to go on a camp, things like that. So I changed to financial maths. Not that that's massively easier, to be honest, but it's just that little bit easier that it makes it the whole thing a bit more manageable. But to be honest, I'm kind of just coasting through it, to be honest. Yeah. Like, you know, running is the focus. You know, you can't really half-ass the run. Mm-hmm. You do need to be putting a lot of time into it. And definitely the last, I'd say, 2 years, that's been what I've been doing. I've had like mainly playing the role of college students. I probably spend far more time studying things about running than I do actually related to my course. That's probably, I'm in college for, I think I can graduate this year if I want to, or I can extend it out to another year. So honestly, I don't mind being in college. Like, it's we actually have a good setup here. I'm in University College Dublin. Like, I live with Louis Mallon. He trains with Mark Kirkgren, Nick Griggs and Callum Morgan up the north. I actually live with, I know you had Emmett on last week. Yeah. I live with Dara in first year when he was in college. And he only still lives like 2 minutes up the road. So with another couple of guys, runners that I know. So kind of meeting and be up there the whole time as well. So there's a lot of runners around me. There's a lot of good facilities here with the university gym and sauna, you know, the cross trainers and things like that. So it's a pretty decent setup that I have.
Yeah, it certainly sounds it. A lot of people are coming through that system now. I just wanted to ask, do you have any training partners, or your program sounds very specific to you?
Yeah. I think on the gym and speed side of things, I was kind of a bit of a lone ranger there for a while. I think the results I've had have probably changed things a bit this year. So there's a few more joining in on the speed development days, on the Mondays that I do now. I'm obviously part of this new thing called the National Endurance Group. Emmett was on about that. So my coach will be one of the three coaches involved. Emmett's another, Mark Kirk's the third. And they kind of looking to try and link in a lot more between various groups and provide facilities in the Sports Institute to athletes who maybe on their own wouldn't have gotten them. You know, it doesn't really affect me because I've kind of hit the standards to be in there. But yeah, it's a good bridge for a junior athletes coming up to be able to like get access to people like the physios in there, like Martina, like the opto jump, and be able to get all this data measured as well. And so, yeah, I do have a decent few training partners. Threshold, I try to avoid training with people when it comes to Threshold because I like to focus on it myself. But again, even like the whole double T thing, the Threshold model, I've only actually started once I got injured on the cross trainer because I was on the assault bike for most of the workouts. And I was trying to like, as I was learning about the physiology, I was trying to like, you know, do my own thing with like, you know, doing step tests on the assault bike, like pricking and getting my zones for like what kind of watts would be outputting. And then I kind of kept that going, and like I kind of fairly strict about it. So I don't really like training with people who are trying to drag you along to a threshold that doesn't make a threshold. And then on the specific side of things, like in the wintertime, it's grand because there's plenty. I just train with the cross-country guys, you know, for hills and things like that. Hills are a great equalizer for an 800 runner. You know, they kind of, you can, you're a lot more, you can train with a lot more people with that. But maybe on a more regular, like VO2 workout, maybe you wouldn't, maybe because there's a bit of a difference there. Because again, I'm only just getting back as well, which is the other thing why I don't really train with people for threshold. Like my threshold was abysmal after just going through that like 800 block of like 20 mile week.
Right? Go on, give us the numbers. Give us the numbers. Where's
it's embarrassing. I really don't want to. Like, I think it's like the first 2 weeks, the 2 minute was staying stubbornly at like 540. I was like, oh, this is just it's gotten down to like 525 now. Nice. So it will, actually, that's a bit ambitious to be honest. It's closer to 530. I was rounding down there. So yeah, I don't have any set figure in mind for what we'd like to get it to. My coach reckons by January it'll be slightly sub 520 for the 2 minute mile and maybe around roughly five minute mile for the 4 minute mile. Which all this stuff is actually quite new to me, to be honest. Like before, he would have threshold on the plan, and I would definitely not do threshold. I was probably doing, like last winter, I think it was very, very different. Like my training week was Mondays, 4 miles morning, speed, gym, 8 miles evening. Tuesday was one workout that was probably closer to VO2, to be honest, than it was threshold. Wednesday was the same as Monday. And then Thursday was just two easy runs. We didn't actually bring in like a 2 minimal workout until well into late November. I think Friday, just like 6 miles. Saturday, some version of hills or VO2 work on the track. And then Sunday, just slogging out like a 13-mile long run. And like, it was probably way too much. I got injured in December, probably because of that. Like, there was stupid stuff. Like, I rolled my ankle and ran on a dodgy treadmill after that and then did the calf on the same ankle leg. But you can actually see, like, we get regular testing as well on your CMJ and various things. They're kind of like an indicator, I suppose you'd call it, like a neurological freshness, I suppose, or how fatigued you are. It's a decent indicator of, and you could actually, when you look back at the data, you can see it just goes down, 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 coming into that time where I did kind of do my ankle. So if it wasn't the ankle, it was going to be something else. And so like we're a lot more on top of it this year, monitoring the workload. We found that like pairing, I think we kind of underestimate how fatiguing the gym actually is paired around that mileage. Like I was doing 12 miles the same day as that speed development and gym, way too much. So we've totally changed things now. And again, this is partly off what we learned when we were cross training too. So like Mondays is just speed, gym, and then I do 60 minutes cross training in the evening, so much lighter day. Tuesday is just an AM easy run and just, evening thresholds, but again, very drove, you know, breaking all the time. So very different to what I was doing last Tuesday last year. Then Wednesday would be 6 mile run in the morning, and then again meet the endurance group for that, the gym on Wednesday, and then I do 90 minutes on the cross trainer in the evening. The reason I would cross train in the evening is because like the gym is so fatiguing. There's induces a lot of muscle damage that I think your coordination's a bit all over the place. It's actually a lot safer to go on the cross trainer afterwards in the evenings rather than going out and running on a tired body. You're just pounding more newtons of eccentric force on tired legs. It's just a higher risk of something going wrong. And then Thursday is double T. I've only had two of them. And actually had to off. I'd be very quick to offload the cross train as well, which is something after going through that this year. So like even yesterday, I had a slightly tight calf, just went hopped straight on the cross trainer. You know, I'm paranoid now about things like this.
Yeah.
So like, you know, consistent, if I can just stay on my feet is the main focus for this year. Friday, yeah, totally off. And then Saturday, kind of like, again, hills, and then maybe once a block, we hop on the track and just maybe still hit like a VO2 stimulus, but in a different way. And then, Sunday, a long run. We actually had a good debate, me and my coach, about the long run. Like I wanted it because it is undoubtedly better than two split runs for aerobic development. He was more erring on the side of, we want you to be fresh for your speed development on Monday. So he wanted like two split runs. And I was kind of saying, well, if I fuel properly, and this is where the change in nutrition is coming in as well, I'm fueling a lot better. Mm-hmm. I'd say starting this summer, and then I've continued it on this winter, fueling a lot more within workouts. So I'm trying to make the argument that like, you know, if I'm doing the long run and fueling through it, that it's, and everything else in the week is pretty controlled, that it's fine. So I think we've come to the conclusion it's okay for now. Like even if it does suppress, like even my speed coach Martina, she was like, I'm okay seeing a suppression of speed values if you feel like you need to get that aerobic development in for now and then coming closer to competition, we can change to split runs and then eventually to one run, one shorter run, or maybe one run and cross training. So, and just see those speed values come back up to like a true reflection of what they should be as you get closer to the indoor racing. But we actually have seen almost no suppression on the speed values. Like, it's only week two of speed work, and the bit of testing I've done, it's already exactly where it was after 11 weeks worth of work last winter. So again, just like, comes back to that consistency thing of you're just stacking, you know, month on month. And even when you then take a bit of downtime, it doesn't take long to get back to where it is. So I think even like by indoors, you know, if you kind of extrapolate that out, I'm probably going to be going into indoors as quick as I was in Tokyo, and hopefully with a much better aerobic base. So I was making the argument that I may not run a lot quicker outdoors because I got, you know, he was basing that off, you know, being injured, but I was like, I got a lot out of it. But definitely where I could see an increase is indoors, just because of that, just with the speeds coming back up. And if I know what I'm doing now on the train side of things and don't miss December, yeah, I was hopefully run a lot better indoors than I did this year.
In terms of those speed development sessions on a Monday, what do they actually look like, Glob? What are you doing on the track?
Yeah, so we start off with like a big long warm-up round activation mobility. We do a ton of drills, and then we'll do things like working on acceleration mechanics. So doing like sled pushes like the high rock sleds do, working on very specific like positions. She actually told me that last year, like, we should get you in the high rocks. Just need to find a partner now for the duo. And then we'll do like stick overhead accelerations. It's kind of bring, you know, takes your arms out of it, forces your obliques and all, and core to kick in a lot more to help stabilize you. Then we'll do like, you know, sled runs, all working on that acceleration side of things. And the speed does change. Like, at the minute, we're in the very early phases, so it's more about building that tissue tolerance to work. It's more about, you know, getting back into hitting good positions rather than just, you know, like, we don't just do a flail in 60 meters sprint where you're just going all over the place. Like, that's, she'd tell me to leave if I did that. You know, it's all about hitting, you know, proper positions first, and then we can start to build in more, you know, and then we start practice that at like sub-max speeds, and then we'll start to get into like max velocity testing. So we're still not in spikes for that stuff just yet. I'd say next week is probably when we'll start to transition to spikes, but even I'm still hitting like 9.7 meters a second for something like 4x60 meters off 3 minutes after all of that warm-up in runners, which is, it's pretty decent. It's as good in runners as I was last year. And it's only after, this is week two, but last year I had like 11 weeks worth of this stuff. So it's come on quite a lot. It's probably close to 10 meters a second. Well, definitely by the next week, I'd say it's definitely close to 10 meters a second in spikes. We'll hopefully get that up to, the goal for next year will be get that up into the 10 threes. And then that's fast enough where we start to work on more of the speed endurance work where you're trying to extend the duration of time that you spend above 10 meters a second. And we hope that'll bring, that's actually quite, it's quite a big stimulus. It will bring on the 800 quite a lot on that speed side of things. Stephanie was through the first four. And so, yeah, that's exciting to work on that. But for now, yeah, that's on a max velocity point of view, that's the way the speed sessions kind of run at the minute. You know, when we get into more of the closer to racing, we'll also do a lot more technical efficiency work over like 400 meters, something like that, where it's just introducing some level of fatigue over like longer reps, like 100 meter reps, but like, you know, off short recoveries, and you're just trying to hold form. So when we, in the summer, like back when I went after Morton Games, when I went back to that kind of strength focused block, and say strength focused, it's still only like 60 miles a week equivalent workload with some cross training, but working on, you know, 1500 pace rather than 800 pace and 400 meter pace, working on that form side of things. So that was the kind of way we structured that mini block, and I thought it brought me on quite a lot, to be honest, on various things. So just about picking the right stimulus at the right time, which I think both my coaches are very good at. And for the current stage we're at in the wintertime, that's just, it's mainly working on the good positions. So yeah.
I mean, those numbers sound incredible. Working your way up to 10.3 meters a second. I mean, what does a sprinter do? Do you have any knowledge of like where they would be on that metric?
I'd imagine it'd be up on, there's probably some 800 guys that are potentially up on 10.4, 10.5. Definitely, if you're running a 44 second 400, they're way above that. Probably way above 10.5 even. But a 300, it's not a massive requirement. But again, for me, more of the 8:15 runner, having that develop, other sides. I probably turned it from a glaring weakness as a junior into, at the minute, probably my strength, at least until I get another couple of years of aerobic development under me that I can maybe go back to my former strengths. But yeah, no, definitely it's years of careful work gone into this. You can start to see, as I'm probably talking about it, But it's definitely worked. It actually got it out of me now this year that you can actually see all the work that's gone into it.
It's incredible. Is it overwhelming at all? I mean, you've highlighted you are a student, but first and foremost, you're a professional athlete. But is it overwhelming working on all of those metrics at once? You're trying to improve that threshold. You're trying to improve your form. You're trying to improve that top end speed. There's a lot to process.
Yeah. I mean, we don't really look at it from a results point of view. Having those results in Tokyo is nice, but it's more of a confirmation of the process is working. So again, we don't have times in mind for next year. We have metrics that we'd like to hit. We have, all the components of an 800, and we would like to see, them rise, and the results will inevitably come from that. But it is more process focused, and the results are just an indicator that it's working. So again, on the max velocity side, we'll look to get that up into the 10s. That'll come about from maybe just more consistency of sprinting, but also fixing some of those mechanical issues, upper body as well, like thoracic extension, rotation, and left shoulder mobility, to just kind of get a smoother arm carriage. It's not all coming from just the lower body. So all these different interventions that we're going to try and do and test regularly and to get them sorted. We'd like to get to the upper limit of a lot of those different speed and capacity tests. Like I said before, it's great to have that strength. It's another thing to express it. So continue working on the actual skill of running to be able to get that out of me. On the threshold side of things, yeah, definitely it's a key component. It's just another layer in the foundation that it'll make me fitter. It'll allow me to get higher quality of work, 800 meter work done and recover off it. We'll be looking to bring in the speed endurance side of things, which is a new stimulus that we haven't really looked at yet. And then cross-training will definitely play a big role in that. It plays a decent role at the minute, more from an injury, we're quite tactical about where we put it in. It's mainly from an injury prevention point of view. And definitely as we start to bring on more of that stimuli that induce a lot more muscle damage, whether it be that speed endurance work where you're going to have to take, I will have to take, 2-3 days of easy stuff afterwards. That's really hard on the body. More of the 8:15 work as you get closer to track season. Eccentric loading in the gym is another thing that we'll probably be bringing in. All that stuff is quite tough. So cross-training will play a big role there in maybe moving more of the thresholds or the easy running to the cross-training to allow adequate recovery and adaptation to that. So again, there's comfort in the numbers, and you get great confidence from seeing all these different metrics improve, and then it does translate to race results as well. So hopefully it can continue to do so.
Yeah, your setup and I guess the meticulous nature of it sounds amazing, to be honest. And is it important to you that you, I guess, show the younger Irish athletes coming through that you can do that in Ireland, you can do that in Dublin, and you don't have to go over to the US or wherever to get that kind of setup?
Yeah, there was a stage there where we had a lot of athletes either going to America or then going to more of the pro groups, which are great and definitely probably the right call for them at the time. We have the Institute here. We have a lot of good facilities, and I'm probably, I'd say, the main one who makes the most use of it. I think, even Carl Doyle, he trains with John Big now, but he started using the Institute a lot more, started working with Martina, and even he was geez, I didn't really know all this stuff was actually here for me. And it is great to have my whole team is Irish, homegrown coach. He's a teacher, he's now the head of Dublin City University Athletics. Brought through a lot of juveniles to the senior ranks, and Martina as well, Irish, all physios Irish, soft tissue Irish, even my agent, Ray Flynn, is Irish. He's actually from the same tiny, tiny part of Ireland that I am. So I've been with him for years, actually. He brought me over for the Millrose Games High School Mile when I was a kid. So I won that. And then obviously after my junior year, he took a great interest. I've been signed with him since then. It is great to see that that you can start to do it in Ireland, that we have such great supports here, especially when you make great use of them. And I think it is more common to see a lot more athletes staying at home now. And I think the endurance squad will start to see that now. There's a lot of younger athletes coming through the ranks. Like, we did have a kind of a glut of European youth and junior medals there for a while. Like, you know, between Dara, Sarah Healy, Rashida, myself, Nick Riggs, you know, and all, we're starting to see that generation kind of come through off the senior ranks. And no, it's great to see. Great to see you on the Wednesdays, you know, the Institute kind of packed full of athletes just, you know, working hard.
Yeah. And you've clearly got the knowledge, like I said, behind you and the resource, which is fantastic. Just talk about, we're about to finish up, but talk about that Muir's Games, because I think that's incredibly cool. You must have been the only, has that happened before? You know, Ray flying an Irish kid out and then you winning the Muir's Games against some of the best American high schoolers?
Yeah, I don't think so. No, it was very cool. It was such a good experience at the time. Like, I'd never been to America or never really been to like a big track meet or everything. And you walk out and whatever number of thousand people are in that stadium up against the best Americans. And like, I remember being in the call room and like, you had to jump out of the way before Philip Ingebrigtsen nearly ran me over. And you're just like, what is going on here? It's actually, I'm going back there. That's my plans for the indoors. Yeah. I'm going to Flagstaff first, myself, Dara, and Andrew Costrin. So get a good stint there. That'll be my second altitude camp. I went to Poch the year that I was hoping to get to Paris. Looking forward to that. I think Martina and then Emmett, obviously, you know, Dara's coach is going as well. Yeah. And they'll probably send a few from the World Cross up after World Cross. And then I'm hoping to race, nothing confirmed yet, but New Balance Boston, and then head down to Millrose for the 800 after that. So that'll be a dream start to the indoor season. So get fit for that.
Well, look, Kian, thanks so much for coming on the podcast and chatting to us today. Really appreciate it, and best of luck with everything.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.